crying.
I mean,
all right.
Get up in the morning.
See, I just wonder.
My wife's got all stars in her eyes. She's happy.
You want to
screen off.
My
I sure hope everything's working because we're going online.
My phone bill, all say
what am I missing now? I got to hit, what, two more buttons?
And they can't do it.
No, they won't.
We're streaming audio right now. This is working, right?
My husband died 15
testing,
years
testing, because that's me snapping.
And I still have my
they won't change it. Once that name is on there, they're not
going to. So you don't have a water yeah. bill.
Did you know you were going to be a star?
And that's what's wrong.
All four of us are going to watch you here at Computer Club.
At least you've got a name.
We have individual meters.
What's that?
Ed, is there an agreement?
I guess I gotta look and see where it's start streaming. What's going on? This says it should be working. Are we working?
Loma Del Mar, all in caps.
All right. Preview's working.
From Amazon Mexico, and then I thought, with everything saying Loma, so
yeah, that. Everybody on that side of the table.
Say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Why don't you just say, send to
the Pledge of Allegiance. Which flag do you want to pledge your allegiance to?
Can't talk Spanish, so maybe the U.S.
Testing to. Oh, look at that.
If I don't like it, I'll give it to the
box. Audio is not working for us right now.
What? With Arizona storage. I mean, oh, you moved.
Why is audio not working for us right now?
Oh, there's
about five of us there. Because
the sound isn't working.
I don't know.
Thank you, Bob.
It's, see, I've gotten mail three or four times, but this is the time I'm coming down.
Master of the obvious.
No, we got like five.
Okay, we're going to kill that and start this one more time.
Well, if it doesn't work out,
and it's testing, testing.
What?
Why? I haven't changed anything. Oh, I guess I did, didn't I? I let the 1709 update install in my computer, and then I didn't check to see if anything was working afterwards.
That's about the same.
There we go. Okay.
You went up to 160 before then, we get our senior discount. Big deal. That's right.
But we have small, start
small
streaming.
Group. We've got Palmini and Lanny in one box.
And
myself,
I think we're online. We're live. Yay! Yippee! Nobody had to wait. Wait for that. Okay, here we are. And we're only 3 minutes over. Sorry for the delay, but I'm ready to start if you guys are.
I gotta go.
I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions here to answer your computer problems. Hopefully. Hopefully I can help you with, with technical problems. So hopefully I'll be able to help you with technical problems.
My computer misspells.
It must be the new iPhone. you heard about that, right?
No, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, well, apparently they've just released an update to the latest iPhone software, because if you type a lowercase I in a text message as though you're typing I and you hit a space key, it should autocorrect to a capital I. Instead, it autocorrects to the letter A and some strange character with a question mark in it.
Really?
Yes.
Wonder if it does it on here.
I think it does.
You think it does?
I think it does. If you've got the latest iOS, I think that if you type in a lowercase I,
I'll just do it.
It would be in like a messenger, like a text messenger or something.
Oh, I can't do it like an email.
Well, you could try it. Yeah, let's see if it'll do it. It's got to be I like I am. Yeah, and now it just hits space. No, it. Have you got.
I need to be down here, though.
Maybe.
I am.
But lowercase I is the issue. So it started with an uppercase I. Just hit a lowercase I and then hit enter. No, you're not. And you know what? They did say it wasn't everyone. But they did push out a fix for
you're
everyone.
Not special. Oh, good. Because I probably just downloaded
maybe you
fix.
Just. Yeah, maybe you just downloaded the fix for it. But so yeah, if your computer is misspelling, it's probably an iPhone.
Operator error.
And Linda is starting us off with a question.
Okay. We have this issue, and this is the question.
Oh, I'm okay.
Say you have all your, you know, all your computers at your house, different laptops, everything's on the same network, and you get rid of one and you're trying to take everything off of it.
Okay.
Like your favorites and all that. If you take your favorites off,
please,
of one computer, is it going to take your favorites off all the computers?
So what you're talking about is decommissioning a computer.
Right.
You want to keep your stuff that's on it, but you don't want but you don't want the computer to go with it, and you're concerned that you might affect what's on the other computers.
Correct.
Are you signed in with a Microsoft account?
Yeah. So this is what we did.
Yeah. If you're signed in with
a desktop to a Mexican girl.
Chino, puedo tener un café también?
And we took it out of my house and then cleaned it off.
Okay.
Because we were afraid if we cleaned off the, I didn't have anything in there. We were watching TV and stuff, but we had all my favorites in there.
Jeez.
And you know, all your favorites have your bank and all that stuff. Okay,
so you're concerned.
Took it out of the house, and then they took the stuff off because we were concerned it was going
to. You were more concerned about affecting your other computers than you were keeping what was on the old computer.
Correct.
Okay, so what you could have done is you could have created a new user account and deleted your old account.
Okay.
That would have just done it. Right off the bat, they would have left with like a user, maybe a username as user. It'd just be a blank user, and then from that user account, you'd want to give it admin accounts so you could turn right around and just remove your other account.
Okay. Well, we just took it out of the house.
Sure. Yeah.
And took the stuff off.
I think the issue inside the house or outside the house really isn't the issue. The issue is, are you signed in with a Microsoft account?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're signed into a Microsoft account, one of the things that it allows you to do is synchronize bookmarks, favorites, contacts. And so if you start editing that profile, you're going to start editing the profile everywhere you're signed in.
Correct.
So you delete a favorite on one computer, and you go over to the other computer, and it's gone.
Right.
That's what she's
makes
asking,
sense.
I think.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Scott? I also have a Microsoft problem. I have a Microsoft account. At home, I was using Microsoft 2016 Outlook. And then when I got here, I put on 2010 Outlook, and it transferred everything that I had from, well, it didn't transfer, it just copied everything from my account over. And one of the great things about 10 was I was able to take any of the junk stuff that I get, and I would go use a rule to use anything from this particular sender to go into the junk file. And if I had 20 already in what was transferred over, take all 20 off. Now that I put the 2016 on the same computer and no longer using the 2010, my inbox is now getting duplicates of the some of the junk mail that I've got. Now, I had two junk mails in a row, so I used on the one junk mail, I used the rule to whatever comes in from this messenger go into the junk file. But so it got rid of the one, but it didn't get rid of the second one, whereas the other one, 2010, got rid of all the ones that were in the box.
Why don't you just block it?
Well, hold on a second. Yeah, because the first assumption that I would make is that you've got different settings between the two versions.
Okay.
And it may in a perfect world, you would have had 2010 installed and upgraded to 2016, and it would have sucked over the settings from 2010.
Correct.
It sounds like you went in reverse. Is that right? You went 2016 to 2010?
No. I had 2010, and then I did the upgrade.
And then you did the upgrade.
Right.
Okay, so maybe your settings didn't get sucked over like it should in a perfect world. And the first thing I would do is check to see that your junk filter, your junk mail filter, is even on.
Oh, it is.
It's definitely on.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm able to use it. Okay,
it is a different set of software, and hopefully it would apply the same rules to it. Were you saying that there are two junk mail folders?
No, there's only one junk mail folder, but from the 2010, all those folders that I had in my email account,
mm-hmm.
they all transferred over to the 2016.
Yeah.
They were there.
Mm-hmm.
However, my inbox that I had whittled down to like 40, and then
refilled up with junk mail.
Well,
things that
no,
should
no.
have been filtered away got the dumped new, into the
new,
inbox.
The new junk mail that I am now getting from yesterday's mail
mm-hmm.
Should have been removed, and which it didn't. So when I went ahead and created a rule to remove this particular piece of junk mail, there was one junk mail followed by another one from the same sender. So instead of getting rid of both of them, it only got rid of the one, whereas the other one would get rid of what was ever in the inbox.
Yeah, unfortunately, things like junk mail are not an exact science. And so I would look at both those messages specifically. Look and make sure they are the same email address, the same same type of subject line. Because as long as the rule you created is followed by both emails, then it should have been applied to both emails.
Right, okay.
And so I would look for some, because it's junk mail, because they're trying not to get filtered, it could be they added a one or a period or something in the email address that your eye didn't pick up immediately.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and you can do filtering on subject. Like if the thing that makes you think they're the same as the subject line, find something in the subject line and you can filter on that.
Well, in addition to that particular one that was next to each other, the other junk mails that came in had already been had rules on them from the 2010, but they still showed up in the inbox. So I got.
But if you uncheck all those rules and recheck them again,
if you go into the set of rules, you can try to reapply them to your inbox. If they're valid rules and functioning, they should pull them out of the inbox. Maybe something right after I would be in your rules. I'd be looking at that list of rules you have for junk mail.
Okay.
And make sure that they all have check marks on them to be used, and force them to run again on the inbox to watch them fail, to watch them not do what they're supposed to do.
Okay, and where would you look for those?
You know, I was just getting in 2016.
I haven't used it. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I have an outline.
Here we go. Okay. On the home, on the menu bar, there's a home tab. The ribbon opens up about two-thirds over. It says move, rules, and OneNote are all grouped together.
Oh, okay.
And so if you click rules, a drop-down menu comes, and it says always move messages. Oh, these are my rules. So it shows the list of rules.
Oh, okay.
And from there, there's two links from create a rule or manage a rule. Or manage rule. I think manage rules is what you're looking for.
Oh, okay.
And that opens up the traditional dialogue of rules and alerts. And there you should see a list of your junk mail rules. And for it to be effective, there should be check marks in all of them.
Oh, okay.
And there's a check mark. Let me see. Where is it? Change, copy, run rules now. There's a button called run rules now.
Uh-huh.
And you can check mark the ones you want to run now. And it shows you which folder you're planning on running it on and allows you to change that folder. So the default, for mine at least, is the inbox. So I would just have to check mark my rules and then say run now, and it would go through the inbox again, applying those rules to every message in there.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I think your solution is going to be in that list of rules.
Okay, great.
Can you create new rules?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
This kind of has gone beyond me. I don't really understand why, if it's junk, why don't you just block it?
Well, that is what we're talking about. We're talking about those kinds of rules. But there are some emails that make it past the blocking filter. Outlook does its own job of blocking junk mail.
Right.
But occasionally things seep through it. And so that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about what Outlook is not automatically blocking.
Right.
And so you can create your own block. When you When it comes up and it gives you the option to say this is a junk mail, that's what essentially you're doing, is you're creating a rule for that junk mail. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Outlook gives you lots of granularity for that. Where, I mean, it could be a legitimate email in all other circumstances, and it's a guy you never want to hear from again. So you can say, that guy, I don't want to ever show up in my mailbox. Yeah. Cool. Well, that was a great question. Linda's was a great question. I had to be in Wyoming this morning, so I don't have any great questions myself. Maggie sent me an interesting article about Bill Gates buying property in Arizona. Did you guys see that?
I saw it. Yeah.
I saw a follow-up later. I didn't get all the way through the article that was taking away some of the Bill Gatesness to the article. Apparently, it's an investment organization he's part of that has bought lots of acreage in Arizona to start
a
smart city.
Have you ever lived in Seattle?
Yeah.
Have you ever lived in Seattle?
Not in Seattle, no.
Okay, well, I'll tell you why. Bill Gates isn't that bright. You sit in Seattle all winter long, one winter, and you know why you're here. Really? I'm not kidding. And in Arizona is close, but it's too darn cold up there. It is.
You can get cold in the winter.
Yeah.
In Seattle.
Oh, Seattle.
Talk about Alaska. Why would anybody live there? The only thing that happens up there is cabbages grow big in the summer.
It's too bad he couldn't find something in Tucson because it is
cooler in Tucson. It's probably cheaper and closer to Phoenix.
It's the
fastest
city in the nation.
Yum.
Right. Once in a lifetime.
I'm getting suggestions for topics.
Northeast, but it's the same Seattle time.
With
please, God, just some sun.
Well, you know, one of the advantages of using Arizona for a smart city is that they could immediately invest with equipment from Tesla. Right? And so they could have an entire area out in the Arizona desert with no power lines running to it. They could do the whole thing solar using Tesla. They could Tesla equip the entire area.
I forgot the population that they prospect for this, but it's around 75,000,
yeah,
I think.
It's big.
Yeah, it's big size.
Well, it's the kind of thing that needs to happen. I think we talked about it before with Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico right now is ripe to be a test bed for an entire society that's running off of alternative power.
Yeah, no kidding. I hope there's reincarnation because I want to come back and see all this stuff.
I have no desire.
I mean, it's all going to happen about the time I croak.
So do we... Hey, Jim. Good to see you. Anywhere you can find it, you sit there next to Pop. I don't know if you guys noticed, but my dad entered. He's joined us. Folks are here for Thanksgiving and kids' birthdays. Tomorrow is Emily's birthday. Happy birthday, Emily.
Happy birthday.
She's going to be 12 years old.
Oh, it's just starting. Yeah.
Now she'll be buying more dresses.
We had a big kids' party last Friday, and it was a joint birthday party between her and her best friend. We did it in Wyoming, and it was half boys. I'm like, oh, this is really weird.
The moods. My daughter's hobby for 10 years was running upstairs and slamming the bedroom door.
She was in good shape, huh?
Yeah.
Strong legs.
I just use straight. But
they do turn out nice.
Yeah.
There are things that we never knew about.
Don't you hate hearing that stuff now?
No, I think it's kind of nice. Climbing out the window at midnight.
I had one who built a snowman in the principal's office.
Oh, oh really?
Get that phone call.
I wonder how the principal was about it. Hey, Pop, how would you feel about a snowman being built in your office?
You know what I'm reminded of was when I got called by the principal
from Rockstar. Oh, now let's get back to tech topics.
Oh, that's bad.
To be fair, I was, what, 7 years old? 6 years old.
My kids threw rocks at cop cars. That's how smart my kids are. Oh.
Wow.
I have a question.
Sure, Bob, go ahead. Open format today.
I'm interested in knowing, since we've talked about security a lot, I'm interested in knowing if there's any way of limiting Wi-Fi.
You mean in terms of
your own property?
Yeah, in terms of what we've talked about in the past with this latest Wi-Fi threat, mm-hmm. where there really isn't good security against the threat except for being vigilant about the way you do computing. Mm-hmm. And these modems and sophisticated routers allow you some degree of Wi-Fi power, so you can set it at low, medium, or high range, or it's a percentage, you can set it at 20 to 30%. But the goal is to not let it bleed outside your property.
Why can't you have, like they have for dogs...
This is going to be good.
A wire that goes around your property and locks it, that simply the dog doesn't go across... And your Wi-Fi doesn't go across it.
Why not just turn down the Wi-Fi?
I hear what you're saying, but that's essentially what I'm saying, is that like the wire the dog can't cross, mm-hmm. you're setting where that virtual wire is by dialing down the Wi-Fi. Uh-huh.
Okay, but property lines are never always straight.
Well, remember, Wi-Fi is radio.
I know.
It's up in the sky.
Like you could put a literal... metal wall around your house and it would stop like a cage, like a Faraday cage.
Okay.
Because that's actually one of the problems we have with extending Wi-Fi in Mexico, is that so much of the construction is concrete and rebar that many times we're not trying to limit Wi-Fi, we're trying to expand it because it can't get through the wall to the room next door. And so you could do that. You could build a wall around your house that would be a higher percentage of rebar in it, and that would stop the Wi-Fi from getting out.
Well, I have no desire to do that.
Yeah, well, it'd be much cheaper just to dial down the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
I got a question along those lines. I'm trying to extend it, not shrink it.
Okay.
About Amp Wireless, you know, the one that got all the great reviews, whatever it's called, the 2600, you know, that Amp Wireless range extender?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm underwhelmed. Like, it doesn't seem to do a hell of a lot. I don't know why.
As far as extending the range?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be all that great.
Do you have it located in a place where Wi-Fi is good?
Yeah, and then it didn't seem to do a heck of a lot. You know what I mean? Like, there's a light on it that says, yes, you have acceptable, you know, signal to the router. It wasn't that far away. It was maybe 15 feet away.
I guess I would be more concerned about what's between you and the router.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of... Well, nothing. That's the thing. Between the extender and the router, there was nothing. But then it didn't seem to extend it all that far because of all the concrete and rebar.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that you'd be able to get it a close to 300 feet away from the router.
Oh, no.
The router should be doing... I mean, at its default, should be doing about 300 feet.
Oh, wow.
Unless it has been pre-tweaked to have less range.
It's the default Telmex router. That's all I know. You know, the...
Yeah, and actually each one of them is a little different. But inside the router software, it'll have a power setting.
You mean I could go and adjust that?
Yeah. Yeah, and if the router is preset at 50%, you could bump it to 100%.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If it's preset at medium, you could bump it to high.
How do you get into how do you do
that? Well, you get into the router using the gateway address, which I could give it to you, because 90% of the time, the gateway address is 192.168.1.254.
Okay.
254.
For the Telmex routers, 90% of the time, that's the gateway address.
Say that, 192.
192.168.1.254. It's the last address in that subdomain. The 192.168.1 subdomain, the router occupies the very last address. And then your computers and devices, your Rokus and your cell phones, they all fall under 254. So they end up like .100 or .151.
So you would type that into your browser? You mean up?
That's right. You would use that as a web address.
Yeah.
And then typically the Telmex routers come with a sticker on the front.
Yep.
And that has your Wi-Fi password. Well, the admin password for the router is typically the word Telmex in uppercase. And many of the newer routers, that's displayed to you when you go to that page, so you don't have to type it in.
Okay. So I can go in there and play with it, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
And so you could extend the range of your Wi-Fi, or the power of that router, and then you could take your extender and move it farther away from the router. And, if you're fighting rebar, extender is not going to help much.
It's rusty rebar. Does that help?
Yeah.
Instead of an extender, couldn't you just use another router and use it as a transfer point, like a relay point?
You could. I mean, an extender is a router, a special purpose router.
Yeah, but don't you lose some bandwidth from going from a regular to an extender?
Well, you could. It really depends on how you're extending. Well, to give you an example, there's an extender here now up there in the corner at the end of this blue cable. The cable is installed from here to the main router. So there is no fidelity that's really lost.
Oh, okay, because of the cable.
Because it's going through the cable. But if you're using a Wi-Fi extender, which the amp is, then there is a fidelity loss because you've got two different sections of signal that you're going through.
I use a second router as instead of an extender because it doesn't seem to have that loss of power.
Are you running a cable?
No, I'm running just Wi-Fi to the other
The other router. So there is a loss. It may be negligible. You may not feel it, but there is a loss. In comparison to running like a straight cable to that other. And that is considered the perfect installation.
I am running the cable. I just didn't realize it.
Yeah. See, the perfect installation, it's called a star installation. You have a central point where your internet comes and goes. That's your main router. And then you run cables out of that. That's why it's called a star, is it goes out these arms to where you want to have Wi-Fi. And then at the end of that cable, you drop a Wi-Fi access point.
Right.
And that's the very best Wi-Fi you could have. And it's required around here with some of these installations. There are people that can't get Wi-Fi from upstairs to downstairs because of the Wi-Fi and concrete. And what they've had to do is run a cable between the two floors.
Yeah, I share with my neighbor a house adjacent to me, and I put it out on the outside wall, and he gets it from the...
Yeah.
From the router. That works good.
That would be the other thing with your range. If you're trying to get around a wall, the closer you can get that access point to an opening in the wall, the better your signal.
That's in a window, you mean?
Yeah, near a window up. Like when we were fighting with the Wi-Fi over there, the difference between having the laptop on the table and having the laptop up here was night and day. Because as soon as it fell down below that to that wall right there, it broke the signal.
This extender again has this thing called MIMU or something, multi in, multi out. Have you heard about that? They claim it's that 10 people can serve at the same time without. I mean, I don't believe it, but is that worth the money or?
Well, in the right circumstances, it's probably not doing you much.
No.
I mean, your Telmex router does not support it.
Oh.
And so that's where you'd be able to take advantage of it.
Would I be better off than getting my own router? Drop kick the Telmex router.
Well, that's a big discussion because that is always a better answer because you get to control your equipment. And so from my perspective, I always think that's the better answer.
Okay.
But for it to be a better router, you'd have to search out better equipment than what Telmex is providing you with. Mm-hmm. To give you an example, right now, for we've been running my house on a Telmex router. And last season, we had a problem where their DNS, the DNS that Telmex was providing, was broken. And there's a whole section of the internet that it wouldn't look up. And there was, I would have to, if I had to make up a percentage, I'd say about 70% of the customers I would visit were getting connected by default to this Telmex DNS. And how that translated to my world and our world is they couldn't look up the computer club. They couldn't look up sccclub.org, just a little plug, sccclub.org, to get at any of these recordings or any of the information I share on our website. And it's because the name is registered with a registrant in Australia, and that doesn't matter. In the global world of internet, you can register your name anywhere, so it's not an Australian thing. But because the Telmex DNS was broken, anything coming out of that registrant was vacant from this side of the internet. And I ended up talking both to Telmex, because this is a real problem. Last season, this was a real problem, because I could get into my own equipment if I had my own router, like you suggested. I could easily change the DNS that's used by my home network.
To why it works.
And it would work with. But the bigger problem was most people don't do that. Most people just run with whatever equipment the telephone company left them with. And if the telephone company's equipment is automatically hooking up to a DNS that's broken, then it's like the computer club doesn't exist in San Carlos.
Right, so Google has its own DNS that you probably use, right?
Well, yeah. And consequently, this whole problem is gone. I came back from Alaska this year to find out that the problem is gone. They've resolved it. But I spent a number of days reporting it to Telmex, who couldn't get me to a tier of tech service to understand what I was talking about. The people I was dealing with is, it's your website. It has nothing to do with my website. And I would walk them through on the phone. Here's how you can check it from your end. And I would teach them how to connect to a local DNS server and see that it's not doing lookups. And they go, oh, yeah, that's right. It's not doing. I'm like, so this is the problem I want to report. And they're like, well, you should report it to your host. I'm like, no, no, where did I lose you? Because I'm showing you your equipment's not working, not my host's equipment's not working. Never got resolved. I even approached my registrant in Australia and said, look, I know this isn't your guys' fault, but I need to open a dialogue with Telmex in our area because they're not doing anything to fix this problem. And they were very helpful and in the end said, look, we have no kind of relationship where we can reach out and talk to these people and tell them. But they have a vested interest in getting it fixed, because what that means is their whole section of the internet just doesn't exist to our section of the internet.
Is this true only with your location, or is this true throughout St. Carlos?
Well, this is the kind of problem that could be true anywhere at any moment, affecting any type of any area of the internet, because of the way we use DNSs. I mean, think of a phone book. You go to a public phone, if you could ever find one anymore. You go to a public phone, and you need to call somebody in the city, and you open up the phone book, and you find a third of it's missing. Right? So, I mean, two-thirds isn't bad. You can call two-thirds of the city, but you start getting into the T's, and you're like, well, how am I going to call my aunt? I don't have their number anymore. So that's essentially the kind of problem we're dealing with. The local phone book down here was missing, you know, a third of the places on the internet.
I understand your analogy, but what I don't understand really what you're missing.
Well, Telmex should be providing the entire phone book.
Okay, and some of us do have it, right?
That's right, because they have various DNSs. Mm-hmm. But more, I would say, if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say about 70% of us are all using the same Telmex-provided DNS. Mm-hmm. So if I go into your router in your house, I'm going to find that Telmex is providing you the same DNS address that I'm using in my Telmex router, that Robin's using in her Telmex router. Now, it doesn't have to be. They could have your service on something that's automatically providing a different DNS, because they've got dozens and dozens of DNS servers in Telmex. But what I learned from this experience is a lot of us are all using the same DNS. And the problem with this kind of problem is that you have to educate the people that you're reporting it to, because it's such an obscure kind of problem. They don't expect somebody to be calling them with this information. Right. It's the kind of problem they don't know how to fix. They don't know it exists, and it gets fixed because they upgraded equipment, not because they went out looking for this problem to fix it. And so that's what I suspected happened, was that the physical equipment that's running the DNS for our local area got upgraded for some reason, and it just flushed out the problem.
Well, this is partly cultural, too, because the typical Mexican thinks he knows exactly how to fix most anything. And if you try and deal with something that's technical, it'll go right over their head.
But you'll try.
And you won't get it fixed. That's what I'm dealing with. That Jim and his pool guy, I've already seen four guys to deal with electronics and such. And I try and tell them what the manufacturer says. And they look at me and they say, I hear you, but they know better. I know it's a cultural hearing problem, and I'm not sure that in the United States it's any better.
Well, I don't know if this... I mean, I think we could have had this same problem in the United States.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you're at that level where you're interacting with these... I mean, and literally, it would have to be like some major internet provider over there connecting to a major internet provider over here, and you have some kind of work related. They had to contract that line. They had to agree to share the cost of that line between their two networks. And so they have that relationship. It's normally like salespeople. There's a salesperson relationship between those two different networks.
But if one of them doesn't want to give you help...
You almost have to show where we're having a problem on this end because of something happening in that end.
Yeah.
Before you can get escalated to somebody that
can
do something about it.
They shut down. They shut down.
What do you mean?
When you try and get across something to some people, whether it's the United States or Mexico, they'll shut down and they refuse to acknowledge what you're telling them.
Well, I'll tell you, that's the kind of experience I had when I was trying to report my problem to customer support, because... Mm-hmm. They've never heard that kind of problem being reported before, so they don't even know how to deal. So they're going through their script of how to help me with a computer problem, and I'm going...
Yeah.
You know, I have a smart TV, and when I go on YouTube, I was getting a lot of stuff from Australia. I'll bet you that might have been because my DNS was more or less programmed for Australia instead of the United States. What do you think? Possible?
I don't know. I don't know how...
Kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, you might be getting smart items that feel all strange just because they have more robust infrastructure of applications.
Yeah.
I mean, just I'm speculating. I don't know, but it could be something as simple as easy.
Can you go in there and put down you only want stuff from the U.S.? Because you do that with eBay, too. You get stuff. A lot of times down here, you'll go on eBay, and you'll even though you put my eBay, you'll start getting...
Well, hey, eBay is a good example. I mean, this is a different conversation, but... But eBay is a good example of that. If you noticed, if you go to eBay without signing in, it'll always give you peso prices from the United States.
Oh, really?
From Mexico, while you're in Mexico, it'll give you peso prices.
Oh, right. I noticed that.
Yeah, and you have to sign in for it to recognize what denomination you want.
But Amazon will do the same thing.
Oh, really?
Well, Amazon's a different story. When you go to Amazon.com, you look at U.S. prices in English. If you go to Amazon.mx, you look at Mexican prices in Spanish. Whereas eBay is, you could be looking at eBay in the United States and all the pricing is in pesos. Unless you sign in.
And Walmart. You know, when you click on Walmart, even though you get Walmart US ads in your you're signed up on your email for Walmart US, as soon as you click on that email to go to the web page, it takes you to the Mexican Walmart.
Yeah.
You have to go down to the fine print.
Very down to the bottom and go into the Walmart US.
You know, for this alone, for those, because how often do we do that? We go someplace that we seldom need to go to, and all of a sudden it's all been changed over into Spanish, and it's all based on your location. Opera, with its built-in VPN, has just been a godsend in that respect. Every time I end up in that situation, I open up Opera, I turn on the VPN, I go back to where I want to go. Everything's in English. It's like I'm in the United States.
They have their own VPN. You don't have to have your own.
They do. They have a built-in VPN in the Opera web browser. Mm-hmm. Wow. You do have to. You still. It's been around for a while now, but you still have to set it up in settings. Say I want to use the VPN. And then the VPN shows up as a button in the toolbar, or in the address bar, that you can click on or off. It's got a toggle switch. I'm trying to bring it up right now as I'm talking, just so I'm more verbose on what I'm talking about. And for some reason, everything just froze up on me. Everything just froze up on me. What's going on? Oh, no. Do something. Are we still recording?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm still on.
Throw the floor.
No, the whole thing's frozen.
I'm still on.
Welcome to the real world.
Yeah. You take the red pill or the blue pill?
Which wire do you cut?
What just happened? My whole system just froze up.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, okay, you know what you do is you hold the power button for 10 seconds and start it up again. But
yeah, then you lose all that time in between.
Come on, come on, come back to life, come back to life. I mean, I'm watching the indicator light of activity, and the bad sign is when it's the same activity, when it's
not moving.
Do I know what?
The VET number? Vanessa?
And this is moving.
I might.
Do you know the VET number, Vanessa?
It's the time I don't want to mess with it. I can turn it off.
Do you know if it's friendly to RoboForm?
It, good question. I don't think that it would, because of the nature of what it is, I suspect that it's fine. I suspect it works fine.
Okay. So what are the advantages of Opera?
Well, that's one of them. The VPN, the built-in VPN is a big advantage. We actually went through some of this, a couple of...
yeah, we did quite a few of them.
Yeah, and they... some of the advantages that I derive from it, it's got a built-in Facebook Messenger. So if you want to stay in your web browser, you don't want to have to open a separate application to chat with people on Facebook. Those messages come as a button on the sidebar, and you can open it like a drawer. Do your conversation. Bob, are you looking over my shoulder to see this? So this is the Facebook Messenger, and what it does is it pulls out from the side, and you can carry on your Facebook conversation. I use messengers to communicate with customers all the time, but I may not want to open up a whole other app or get into the Facebook page to do that. So I can carry on those conversations right here out of the Opera web browser. And Bob's one of the few people that can actually see this. Here I am surfing the internet, doing my regular tech stuff. If I get a message, I get a red dot on the messenger icon. I can click on the messenger icon. Are you freezing up again?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
What is going on here?
So while you're looking at that, this just comes up and calls it Opera Mini.
Okay, now when I've been talking about Opera, I've been talking about for the PC platforms.
Okay.
Not the mobile platforms, but the... Okay. I'm really not sure whether the mobile... In fact, I've got Opera... let me find out. I got Opera right here. I do use it on mobile as well because I like it, but I haven't used the VPN on mobile. And that's the build 1709. And I have not had any chance to really play with it. And that's the only thing that's changed since last week.
Oh.
And so I wouldn't be surprised. I think last week we were talking about me trying to get my old computer, my old Dell, up to the feature update. And whenever it went to sleep, it would come back and crash.
Oh.
Now, this is an ancient 2007 Dell laptop with an unsupported video card. So none of that behavior from an update surprises me. I'm disappointed, but not surprised.
When is that free feature up?
Feature update? It's happening right now.
I know, but when will it expire?
When is expiring for the freebie?
The freebie has expired.
Oh, it has? I thought they extended it.
The accessibility update is, thank you, the accessibility free update will expire at the end of this year. That's where you can go to Microsoft's accessibility page and say, I want Windows 10, and they give it to you.
Oh, okay. So if you have Windows 7, they'll give it to you.
They'll just give it to you. They don't do anything to check and see if you qualify under any kind of accessibility program. I think that's just their way of keeping a lock. They want to keep control over how they market and sell Windows, but they also want as many people to upgrade to Windows 10 as possible.
What do you think of the idea of going from 7 to 10 for people that are really used to 7?
Okay, you're nuts.
Well, you know what? It's a better upgrade than to 8 or 8.1.
Yeah,
it is much, much easier transition.
Okay, but is it also good from 7 to 10, or should you stick with 7 as long as possible?
I think you should get to 10.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Compatibility of your laptop, how much memory you have?
Oh, I have plenty
of memory?
I have 12 gigabytes of memory.
Yeah, let me answer that question, because by way of answering your question, every release since Windows Vista has required less computer. And that goes for Windows 10 as well. Every release, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Windows 10, Windows 7, all required less computer than the previous operating system required. So you're guaranteed a performance upgrade. The other reason that I would do it is because they're going to drop support for 7, and they're going to charge you for 10. And so if you don't do it now for free, you're going to be looking at a $100 bill later to do it.
Right.
When they drop support for 10, which they have pretty much everything except for security updates, then you're going to need, then your computer, it'll be like XP. It will be vulnerable to security problems.
What are the negatives of going from 7 to 10, if you don't mind me? What are the negatives of going from 7 to 10?
Well, I think that my Dell laptop is a good example of a computer that a normal person would have to just retire and buy a new computer. It would not have made sense to put 10 on it. But to be fair, it didn't make sense to put 7 on it either. I'm just a nerd and put 7 on it. It probably should have been retired a long time ago, but it still works.
You have an i3, that should be good enough. Intel i3 should be able to handle it.
Oh, yeah. Their system requirements for 10 is basically anything that'll run 7. Anything that'll run 7, run 8 is going to run 10 because it requires less computer. The memory requirements, the minimal memory requirements is something like 1 gig, a gig and a half. The processor requirements is like a one gigahertz processor or higher. You can run 10 on anything that's running 7, and it should run better.
Okay.
As
far as getting used to the interface.
More negatives. More negatives. Companies like QuickBooks use these opportunities to sell you more product. And so your old QuickBooks program is not compatible with Windows 10.
Which I don't use.
Yeah, but it's an example of a negative going to 10. Yeah. We had to face that at the bed and breakfast. We use a version of QuickBooks 2007, and it wasn't compatible with 10. And I ended up making a virtual machine of Windows 2000 and loading it in there, and my wife uses that for the bed and breakfast. Yeah. So that was very doable. If you have enough computer, you can do stuff like that. But it won't run natively in 10. You have to buy the version that's compatible with Windows 10.
Okay.
The majority of stuff out there is compatible with 10. I mean, the majority of the old stuff is compatible with 10. It's very specific. QuickBooks, Intuit, it's a horrible way to do business, but they've always done business that way.
And is it good for, like, speech recognition, better than 7?
Well, the Cortana is very dead on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure what speech recognition you're doing.
If you wanted to go to YouTube and do a search for something.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is dead on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you do it through Cortana. I'm not sure what you're doing it through on Windows 7, but that stuff on Windows 10. Cortana has been available on Windows 10.
Yeah. Well, I was going to put speech recognition on 7, but if I'm going to go over to 10, maybe I don't even have to.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Speech recognition on 7 had to be added by a third party. It was like Dragon Speech or something like that.
Which is the one I was thinking of putting on.
And you might still need something like that, because what 10 doesn't have integrated in it is the ability to dictate. So you can't write documents with your voice in 10 right now.
So am I better off putting the Dragon on the 7 before I transfer over or after I transfer over?
I think you should probably investigate. There's probably a new version of Dragon for Windows 10 because of the nature of what it is.
Okay.
Because speech is integrated into 10, there's probably, at the very least, there's probably a patch for your version of Dragon if it's intended to be compatible with Windows 10.
Yeah. And I could check that even before I start.
That's right, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you,
Scott,
yes.
If you were to bring a printer down from Canada or the States, would you be able to find a cartridge for it in Mexico? Is there any issues with
HP
cartridge availability?
You know, maybe, but I wouldn't haul a printer down here. I mean, you'd have to love that printer to want to haul it down here. You can buy a printer at Walmart for around $50.
And second question, what's the best way of getting football, like soccer, on any television?
European.
Any suggestions?
Sports.
Is there anybody?
VN Sports.
VN Sports?
VEIN Sports. You should be able to get it on your box once we get it set up.
Okay. Good, great.
You also get NFL.
Okay.
What do you use for that?
There is a deal called, it might be gone now, I haven't checked, but it's called Pro Sports. It's an add-on.
For Cody?
For Cody, yeah.
Pro Sports, and you don't pay anything for it?
No. And then you can also, if you use Players Club or Vader's, it has the NFL Network, all the game streams on, you know.
Cool. Do you guys do sports? Yeah, I should look into
it. It has MLB, it has NFL, it has NBA, it has NHL. It's all free with the $15 a month.
Oh, but you do pay for the service.
Or else you can do the $5 Players Club.
Okay. Yeah.
And they brought up an issue about printing games. And I ran into a big problem that I think that we're all subject to.
So you're sticking with
me. Having a printer. And I had aftermarket printing in it, and it worked fine.
Okay.
And I went and put in one of the colors after it ran out. And it refused to accept it. It shouldn't. So with the
manual
that I have,
HP printers are regional. Yes, are their inks.
Okay, but I couldn't find out where my printer was from.
Was it a refill that you put in it?
Got it set for Saturday.
Or an original?
There's three colors in black.
Okay.
Okay, and it was working fine. And I ran out one of the colors. I put in the replacement of the same manufacturer that was fine, and it did not no longer print.
But the replacement isn't an original HP cartridge?
No, none of them were.
Okay. That's the problem.
None of them work. So I went ahead and I went down to Sam's or whatever and bought. But when I saw the cartridges, you can only buy them all colors at once. I saw it had a notice to only be used in Latin American countries.
Wow, that's a new one on me. When you said that just now, I haven't run into that.
For a couple of years.
Wow.
Okay. So now I figured I had an issue with this printer. It was one of the high end printers. And I had a problem with it, so I had it when I bought it. Then I had to get they had to replace it, but they couldn't replace it until they sent me one from the United States, because they didn't have this printer.
Right.
So I assumed that I had a United States printer now. So I went ahead and bought the original color from the United States, put it in, and it still doesn't work. Okay, so now I've retired that print, even though it's a high-end printer with everything in it.
Okay.
And it was working fine. And they said they had a firmware to solve this problem, but evidently there was a huge outcry against this.
Interesting.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting that you're so aware of that, and I wasn't aware of that at all. I didn't realize that was going on.
And I know nothing, but I was aware of that.
That was not what you were supposed to infer.
No. Purchasing even as close as Phoenix, you have to buy your ink in Phoenix. It's
really?
At least it was a couple of years ago, and I assume still is.
Because what
regional,
they started doing
is, regional.
How do you know where your machine emanates from? Whether it's
where did you purchase it?
Right here in town.
Wait, you purchased the U.S. printer right here in town?
Yeah, it's the only one they had.
That's
they had
true.
A high-end printer.
Oh.
And I had to get it replaced.
Oh, okay.
I had to wait a long time. I had a company in the United States.
Okay.
So evidently they
I hate printers. I've never liked printers. The whole
thing. Well, never owned another HP. I actually had to retire that one and buy a new one. So
right.
They're trying to reestablish their decent reputation. They're trying to do away with all this, but apparently they have created some. I have a relative.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
HP.
This is interesting. I want to hear more about HP.
They had quite a national outcry over this type of thing because particularly among executive class, they move so much.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to rectify the situation. It's going to take them a couple of years.
Well, the firmware that they said would resolve didn't resolve.
Right.
Downloaded the firmware. And so it's a big problem.
Okay. And it's a mechanical one. It cannot be solved with software.
Really?
Updates. Right.
So that's why I couldn't solve it.
Well, they used to set the region in a printer when it was getting set up. Like you would have like a faceplate that would be put on it, and the faceplate would have like little plastic bumpers on the bottom of it, and it would touch micro switches. And when it hit, if the faceplate had been made for Latin America, it would have Spanish, and it would have different bumpers than the English faceplates. And when it pressed up against the micro switches, that's how it would know which region the printer was for. Okay.
Well, that's, you know, I actually had to retire a better printer. At some point, maybe I'll get on with customer service and see if they'll solve it.
Yeah. One thing HP has always been good about, and I have lambasted their products for a long time now because I've been so disgruntled about the quality of their craftsmanship. But the one thing they've always had really good quality with, if you're under warranty, there's somebody to help you. I mean, they're quick to answer the phone, and they'll stay with you and hold your hand till you're done, and they'll get back to you. They'll call you back. They've always been really good customer support. But my attitude's always been, I don't want to have to call customer support. I want it to work. And then,
how are their computers?
Well, they were crap. They were crap for years.
And are they still?
They're getting a better reputation in tech journalist circles. You read good reviews. But at the same time, we've reached the point where we're kind of oozing out product. It's kind of hard to build a bad product these days. I mean, it could be slow and it could be cumbersome and unattractive. But as far as everything's built onto one board now, so nobody has to really assemble anything. The drives are SSD drives, so there's no moving parts to go bad. A lot of these products don't need a lot of cooling anymore. So there's a lot less cooling fans and cooling systems to break. So they're kind of in the ideal world to build products that won't have problems like they've had in the past. The HPs used to notoriously get too hot. They would burn their video processor off the motherboard because they would get so, especially in this climate. We used to have a stack of HP laptops all around the same model. And it was all the same thing. They'd gotten overheated in Mexico, and the video chip just popped off the board. And that's just quality control. There's plenty of laptops that weren't having that experience, but the HPs, they built cheap, crappy products.
What size of solid-state drives do they now make, and how economical are they?
Well, they're They're not as reasonable as spinning discs, but you can get a terabyte drive for like under $400.
Under $400.
Yeah.
Still.
And you can get. I was just looking at a 250 gig solid state drive, and it was just around $100, a little less than $100.
That's not.
Yeah. You would buy a drive here in Mexico for just under $100. It'd be a spinning drive, and it would be either 500 gigabytes or a terabyte.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the price range here locally you're comparing it to.
If you can afford it, it's worth every dime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me say that.
10 times this.
Yeah. Whenever you come to my office with a hard drive problem, we recommend the solid state drive. I really don't like the idea of people buying economically these spinning drives. It's just not worth it anymore. If you're going to invest in keeping a laptop running, then it doesn't make sense to buy the cheap drive. It's much better. It boosts the performance. An old computer feels new. Things are more reliable. There's less cooling. There's better battery life. It's one of the best upgrades you can do to your computer is replace it with a solid state drive.
How about if you go get the 250, that's reasonable, put it into your...
Mm-hmm.
And then for your data disk, use an external...
If you've got lots of data, and like say you've got a big movie collection or something like that, that economically that makes sense. In the end, data is more secure on these solid state drives. And what I mean by secure is they're less prone to errors.
Uh-huh.
Because the spinning disk is a moving part, it will wear out. Mm-hmm. But before we didn't have any options, so that was just something we lived with, and we had backups for those contingencies. But these drives that we have now have no moving parts. The quality of the drive does determine its life. What a solid state drive, what a manufacturer does is it sets aside, because they do wear out. Their magnetism wears out. The way that they store in the memory cell can wear out over time. And so the higher quality SSD drives have a larger contingency of memory sitting free. And inside, I mean, the drive itself is like its own little computer. And it is verifying how hard it was to read from a section of the drive. And it's comparing it to a chart saying, that was too hard. And grabbing that data while it still can, and it's moving it to another section of memory so that you don't ever have to deal with that data being lost. So there is a finite life of these solid state drives. It's something like 5 to 7 years, but they've done their best to expand that life as long as they possibly can.
Well, on a 1 terabyte, could you just as easily make a second partition on the,
Yeah, the beauty of this technology is you can treat it like a spinning disk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's very little you can't. There are some nuances when it comes to drive optimization software, things like defragging, things like that, that are slightly different because it's an SSD, but nothing you actually have to worry about.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as the things you're accustomed to worrying about, either you don't have to worry about it or it works exactly the same.
Well, I would like it for my desktop. I have 3 separate gigabyte drives in there, and they're the big ones. So I would want to replace one of them with maybe a solid state one for the main C drive.
Yeah, you would typically do it for performance and security of data. Those would be the 2 big reasons you would do it.
Well, I'm sure the 250 would satisfy my C drive, but I have the big SATAs. Will that transfer over to one of the smaller?
You're welcome, Rowan. As long as you don't exceed the capacity of the new drive, then it should transfer over.
Okay.
So, like, say you've got a 1 terabyte drive, but you're only using 100 gigabytes of it.
Right.
You could buy a 250 gigabyte SSD drive and transfer it over without a problem.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, Scott, a real pleasure. Would you be kind enough to send me an email with a link to your?
I would. Give me your email address.
SRavenCox.net.
Let me write it down. You said S. Raven?
No, S-B-R-A-V-E.
Oh, wait a second. Where is my list? Here we go. SB as in bird?
Yeah, SBRAVE.
SB Raven?
Yeah, cox.net.
Sure.
I'll be seeing you next week, also. I'm still here.
All right.
But, you know, last time I met you, I don't know, I lost my vision. Were you aware of that?
No.
No, yeah, I got macular degenerative eyes.
Wow.
And, I have a special program called Zoom Text. Have you ever heard of it?
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Lifesaver.
Yeah.
Lifesaver. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, real pleasure to see you, Scott.
You too. Did you get a keyboard as well to help
you out? Oh, I did.
Okay.
I did. Wow.
Yeah. No. Makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah. And I'm getting a DaVinci monitor. You know what that is?
No, I haven't heard of that.
$3,000 item from the state. They're giving it to me. It's got a camera. It'll take pictures of whatever you put on it.
Oh. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I have heard of that. Have you considered a touchscreen computer?
Yeah.
Are you using a touchscreen computer?
No, I never have considered that.
You might consider that just because if you find yourself like this, you may just want to do this. Instead of backing over to this.
Yeah. They're all set up the same. Okay.
If you follow what I mean. If you find yourself leaning into your screen this much, you might want to just continue with a finger at that point instead of having to grab for a mouse. Yeah,
you have to get another
it would be a computer upgrade, yeah.
A computer upgrade. Okay.
Typically a touch screen adds about $100 to a computer. Yeah, it's pretty available. Yeah.
Well,
you're very welcome. Thanks for showing up, guys. Hey,
got
Jim,
a question for you.
Hey, let me sign off of this. I'm going to just say my spiel. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. If you have joined us today, thank you for making this happen. Thanks for being part of what we do. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15 in Tequila's here in San Carlos. They loan us internet and table service. They give us a place to do this meeting, and we really appreciate them. Come in the mornings. Come early on Tuesday. Do breakfast and stay for our meeting. If you're in San Carlos or if you're anywhere in the world looking for computer help, I'd appreciate you getting a hold of me. You can reach me through our website at internationalcs.net. Or if you're interested in the computer club, any of these recordings, you can find that website at sccclub.org, sccclub.org. I guess that's all I got. I'm going to shut this off and say, until next week, tech on. I just say stop, right? Stop, there we go. Stop this. Got one more thing to stop. Goodbye, everybody.
We'll show you how to do it. Tell you how to do it.